Blog Talk Radio.
This is Monica Leal welcoming you to the LL Research radio program In the Now with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty. Today is Friday, September 21st, 2012. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. Jim McCarty is Carla Ruckert's husband, the scribe for the Raw Contact, and president of LL Research. Please visit our websites, llresearch.org, home to over 1,500 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, the Law of One material, interviews, speeches, and more, and the community website, bringforth.org, that's bring, the number 4, th.org, featuring forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. I'll be asking Carla and Jim questions that come from you. If you'd like to ask a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 646-595-2294. Or you can join the chat room at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Monica Leal, and I'm talking with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty of LL Research. Carla and Jim, I hear you had a super exciting week.
We did, Monica. I'm telling you, we ate, we worked, we watched TV, we wrote our little letters, we prayed our little prayers, and we slept. How are things with you?
Whew. Well, not quite that exciting, but no, I actually had a really, 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 really busy week just with my business because we've got some kind of bonus incentive going on, and so it's requiring a lot of attention from me. And then, yeah, so that was on a positive note, you know, good kind of busy. And but then I got some sad news today. A good friend of mine, well, you know, an old friend. I used to, you know, we used to hang out back in the, you know, late 70s, early 80s. And anyway, she's been in a nursing home for a few years, and I just got a call from the nursing home that she'd been taken into the hospital, and she's currently on life support and in intensive care. So, I just got that news a little while ago, actually.
You know, it occurs to me that, well, to be frank, it occurred to me when you told me about it just before the show started, that it might be a really wonderful thing if we could make this opening to be about her and about the strength of prayer. Call it meditation or thinking or worrying, whatever you want to call it. What's her first name? Usually first name is plenty. For
her name is Mira.
Mira. All right. Those who are listening, and even those who are listening in the future, let's spend a little bit of time praying for that which we know is the truth. We know that Mira will go on forever, not in this life perhaps, in others. Certainly we have gone on in many lifetimes before this, and we will go in many after this. We pray that Mira may do all that she wants to do here, if recovery is that which is her best interest spiritually. May she recover fully. And let us pray that if she does move on, that she is able to move on at this time of harvest to fourth density, walk those steps of light, and graduate with glorious high scores in service to others and high polarity. Let us pray for Mira that all may be as it should be, coming into alignment with the love and the light of the one infinite creator, in absolute confidence that which is the very best for Mira will happen now. And we pray for those who are assisting her, the doctors, the nurses. If there was ever a time for them to be alert, if there was ever a time for the ER to be washed or wherever she went, was it to emergency surgery? Anyway, wherever it was that she was, let us pray that if they scrubbed it within an inch of their lives, it's so easy to get infections there. So let's just picture a very sanitary place for her to be and all the strength in the world to be better and better that she may serve as she truly wants to. Thank you, Lord, for all these blessings. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And Mira, thank you for giving us the opportunity. Well, thanks. That felt really good, and that's a good thing to do, I think, when we have emergency.
Absolutely.
Like that. Yeah.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for that, Carla. I really felt the love, and I think we should stop here, or I'm not going to be able to do the show. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was calling up heavy light there.
Yeah.
The unseen friends. Yeah.
Absolutely. But thank you for that, because she's a beautiful soul, and that I know.
Yeah, that's so. What she told me. I trust that. She would
okay.
have to if she fooled around with you in her heyday.
Aw, that was sweet. Okay, well, I'm going to go ahead and move to the opening riff then. This is from session 55.7. Questioner, can you tell me, in the polarizations in consciousness, if there is any analogy with respect to what you just said in this type of context with respect to what we're doing right now in communicating with Ra? I am Ra. There is no relationship between this type of contact and the bidding process. This contact may be characterized as one typical of the brothers and sisters of sorrow, wherein those receiving the contact have attempted to prepare for such contact by sacrificing extraneous, self-oriented distortions in order to be of service. The Ra social memory complex offers itself also as a function of its desire to serve. Both the caller and the contact are filled with gratitude at the opportunity of serving others. We may note that this in no way presupposes that either the callers or those of our group in any way approach a perfection or purity such as what was described in the bidding process. The calling group may have many distortions and be working with much catalyst, as may those of Ra. The overriding desire to serve others, bonded with the unique harmonics of this group's vibratory complexes, gives us the opportunity to serve as one channel for the one infinite creator. Things come not to those positively oriented, but through such beings.
Thanks. Thanks, Monica. I picked that today because I thought it was something that will catch us up if we're not careful when we're thinking about the spiritual life. It's easy to think about the spiritual life the way we think about school. We think about, okay, you know, get ready for examinations, get ready for graduation. Those terms are used in the Ra contact. But they don't mean the same thing. They don't carry the same energy because the grade is not a matter of your achievements. It's a matter of your intentions, and that's a hard one. So let's look at that a little bit. The way a lot of people get ahead in life is to grab for things and figure out how to get things, and they do very well. It is a wonderful thing to be clever in the outer philosophy of our culture. To be clever and to be savvy and to know how things work in, quote, the real world, close quote. I mean, just having somebody tell you about economics will turn you service to self. It'd be hard to get all of that information in and not realize, oh, my God, there are so many ways to serve self. no matter what you say, this is what we're really doing. We're building up ourselves. And you can't really do that. You have to keep looking not at what you've done or not at even what you're faced with as much as who you are, how you are meeting this present moment. What the Ra group was talking about, what Don was questioning about, had to do with the bidding of a negatively oriented entity from the unseen realms, I like to call them, just that's a very vague term, which I like because of its vagueness, because there are a lot of unseen realms, but there are those of a very clearly service to self polarity that, you know, rejoice in being service to self and think that's the way to go and the best way to be. And they simply, you know, get a lot of stuff for themselves and you know, they share it with their family and they feel really good about that because, you know, they've won the race. Well, as Jesus put it, my kingdom is not of this world. There's no race on earth that you can win by doing what Don and Jim and I did before the Ra contact. Because they were things that were against the cultural norm. For instance, Don gave up a bunch of his salary so that he could pay my living expenses, so that he could have my work. You know, he wanted me to work with him, be a partner. And he underwrote that so that I never lost my... I will admit it was a small salary. Nobody can believe that a librarian with a degree would work for what I worked for. Louisville is not either coast, and it was a private school, and they notoriously pay less than the public schools. So anyway, if you think about it, Don had been paying my salary since 1970 when we made a formal agreement to go into partnership together as the L&L company, standing for Love and Light. So he had sacrificed his money. He sacrificed all of his time that he spent working because that was the way that he got the money together so that he could pay the bills and do his research. The research was everything to him. And he asked me if I would channel. It turned out I had a gift for it. And in the end, at the end of his life, the Ra contact happened. And he told me, you know, this is my life's work and I'm satisfied with it. So that was one sacrifice. Jim sacrificed twice. First of all, he sacrificed all of the things of this world. He went through school to the master's degree level, and then he looked around at the world that he lived in and thought, you know, none of this makes any sense. I'm going to retire. And with the money that he had earned in the last couple of years and saved back for just such a booth, he bought some land in Kentucky after looking around at various other states. He landed here. And he built on his large acreage. How much acreage was that, maybe?
It was 132 acres of knob land.
Yeah, knob land.
Wilderness.
So it was a lot of up and down to it, but it was 132 acres. And he had quite a few acres of arable land as well. I mean, he could plant what he wanted to, and he did. And, you know, the idea was to be self-sufficient, and he and many others in Kentucky at that time were part of the Back to the Land movement that was a big part of Kentucky culture at that time. I don't think we get a lot of people these days, but Kentucky real estate hasn't gone up like it has on the coasts. And so if you want to buy a substantial amount of land, it's a little bit easier in a state like Kentucky to do that. And it's a beautiful, beautiful place to live. So it wasn't that he sacrificed. He sacrificed all of the things that he could make with money. And, you know, for a 25-year-old, this is huge. I mean, Jim could have gone far. Looks and brains and education and away with people. And, you know, he could have chosen what he wanted to do, and he would have been very good at it, and he would have made a lot of money, no question about it. He didn't want to make a lot of money. He wanted to seek and serve the infinite creator. You want to put that in any other way, Mickey, after I finish talking here, I'll let you. But and then he turned around and sacrificed that, his 6.5, 7 years of living where he built his own homestead. He was happy as a little lamb. He planned to be buried there. He built a beautiful guest cabin. He built a little house for the bee work. And it was all beautiful work. It was like, you know, log cabin making. And I was astounded. Even his outhouse had a glass window in it. It was, what do you call it, Mickey?
Yeah, kind of like a picture window.
Yeah, it had different colors in it.
Oh, stained glass.
Stained glass, yeah. I was just amazed at that stained glass window in the outhouse. It was so beautiful. You know, his obvious way of living, you know, brought out the beauty of everything. And that's where he stayed. He was so happy there. He did his, you know, his work there in the morning was meditation and reading and journaling. His work the rest of the day was hard physical labor, improving the land, building his buildings, doing stonework. He made a beautiful what do you call those things?
Retaining wall behind the cabin.
Well, no, I was thinking of
fireplace out front.
Of the where you could store things. You know,
oh, a root cellar.
Yeah, the root cellar. He completely lined a root cellar with stone also, and I was very impressed with that. Okay, so what did he do after putting everything that he had into this and teaching, you know, the opening of the frontal lobes, Lingo's teachings, his teacher's teachings, was about opening the frontal lobe. So mine, obviously, had to do with giving up money, obviously. I never made more than $400 in a month in my life. Never. And now I don't make anything. But I had to give up having children and marriage. Don was not up for either one of those things, and being celibate, I certainly wasn't going to get pregnant. So during our 16 years together, I gave up the things that a woman that was 25 when she went into this relationship would want, you know, a home, kids, being normal, that kind of thing. I gave that up. And I continued to give it up, actually, after Don died, because Jim definitely did not want kids. And so I never did get a chance to have them. And, of course, I had always felt that, oh, gosh, yeah, I'm going to have 6 kids. You know, that's what I want to do. I want to go out in the country and raise good, healthy kids. No, never got to do that. But I was always choosing what felt right at the time. So, Mickey, do you want to talk any more about that, or shall I just move on?
I think you've done a good job. Why don't you just go on to the next...
Okay.
Like the last sentence there seems to be the crux of it all.
So there was a lot of yes, he's talking about things come not to those positively oriented, but through such beings. So we got together. Don just fell in love with Jim, and actually so did I. And with Don, of course, it was strictly a comradeship. With Jim and me, there was a perfectly normal friendship becomes lover, becomes friend plus lover. And that was a wonderful thing. And obviously, it made the contact with Ra possible because it didn't happen until Jim moved in with us. So all of a sudden, bam, we get this really wonderful contact that I actually was very hard to carry the contact. So in a way, we were all sacrificing the whole time. I was sacrificing 2 or 3 pounds of my body per session, and Jim was sitting there in every session just sweating and sweating and sweating. I'll never forget waking up and seeing him just a bundle of sweat on the floor there. But he'd sit there with his legs crossed, sending me love. And for some reason, that was a hugely expensive thing for his body to do. And he would end up just being totally overcome with sweat. But, you know, look what came out of it. And obviously, Jim and I won't say Don, because Don was close to perfect. Jim and I are very imperfect souls. Now, Jim's a whole lot closer to perfect than I am, but there's no sense going into our imperfections. We all have them, and it's part of being human. It really is. But it doesn't matter because, as Ra said, we were in absolutely every sense that we could think of, wanting and seeking to serve the Creator and to receive information that might be helpful to those who were seeking. And thank God it really did turn out well. But I think it's a very big thing. It's a very anti-cultural thing to realize that everything you've been taught in this culture is pretty much for the birds as far as what is beautiful and what is good in the way of cultural things, because you're being taught to basically to consume. You're encouraged to marry because that will mean more people to consume. And people, the people that advertise in the media, they all want you to become more and more willing to consume. And so it's very easy to be a person that is sometimes service to others and sometimes service to self. And sometimes service to self sounds and feels like it might be service to others. So you really have to move from testing out other people's energy to testing out your energy. How do you feel? Do you feel you can serve in this instance? If you can serve, how can you serve? And, you know, put it in those terms rather than what can I get out of this relationship? What can I get out of this job? That kind of thing. So, see what you can do, folks, to spend a little time tabernacling with the Creator in silence. That's always my advice to anybody that wants to know, well, how can I, you know, get more positively oriented? How can I become one that is going to walk those steps of light and graduate into fourth density? And, you know, you think it's about something you've accomplished. And people will say, well, look at that person. He's done this, he's done this, he's done that, he's done that. But you don't know his mind. You don't know his heart. You don't know what was intended. But you do know your heart. You do know what you intend. So keep yourself focused on yourself. As far as, well, what's the best I can do in this situation? How can I find the love? Where is the love in this situation? No matter what it is, it doesn't matter whether it's you alone or whether it's you and another person or whether it's you vis-a-vis dancing with the culture in some way or another. See what you can do. See what you can do to find the love. And if there is no love out there anywhere that you can find, seek in your heart to find the love that you have to offer, because everything is part of the Creator. That person is part of the Creator. That person is as much a part of the Creator as you. And it really helps to think that sometimes, because we don't always look like the Creator in how we do and how we be. But it's great to be outwardly serving the Creator, and thank God that for people who do serve. But the inner work has to come first. It really does. Work on yourself. Work to become that entity that you wish to be, that you hope to be. And let your personal goals be not of this world, but, shall we say, of the next, in that you pray to help people, to help the Creator, to help yourself. just to be a person that makes a difference in this world. And it starts with how you are. It starts with that inner work. And I really commend it to you. The inner work, regardless of your situation in life, regardless of whether you need to thank the Creator or whether you want to beat the Creator up and hit him upside of the head and say, what's going on? You know, spend the time with the Creator and see how that changes your life for the better.
Funny that you mentioned that. I don't think I've ever heard anybody say that sometimes you might want to beat the Creator up.
Well, you know, it happens to me. What were you thinking, well, Lord?
Yeah. I mean, you know, we've all heard people express anger at God because they lost a loved one or, you know, something like that. But just recently I was feeling that very thing of, you know, not just like, did you have any idea what it was going to be like for all these souls to be suffering this much? Is this really necessary? And just feeling this strong emotional charge that I felt like I didn't feel guilty about it. Like, oh no, God's going to strike me down. It wasn't like that. It was more like, hey, here's some feedback. This is what it's like down here. You know, and it wasn't my own suffering. It was observing, you know, suffering in others. And I was wondering, you know, do you think maybe part of our mission is to give that feedback back to the Logos of what it's like down here in the trenches?
The suffering?
Well,
I don't think suffering is necessary, but I think that our responses are certainly the gift that we give, because the Creator offered us these lifetimes that we have because it wanted to learn about itself. And so we are parts of itself, so it tossed us all out into this situation where we've gone through two stages of a seven-stage system back to the octave and the eighth, and now we're in the third stage, and boy, this graduation thing is tough, and, you know, we're just about done with this third one, so, you know, fourth coming up, that sounds like it's going to be, you know, a dream situation, but I imagine that once we get there, we're going to be working with difficulties and confusions, just that's because that's just the condition of those who are less than perfect, you know. And I don't think that we're striving for perfection. I think we're striving for balance within ourselves so that we are transparent to the light of the Infinite One. And I think that it's really important that we make a really good effort here in third density, because the way we come out of it in third density, the way we graduate as far as how we've managed to polarize, is going to affect the next three densities, the fourth, the fifth, and the sixth. So we give ourselves a boost in the future by working on our spiritual life and our spiritual walk now. And that's always been very comforting to me. I don't mind doing the work knowing it's not lost, it's paid forward in an account that is infinite. So I think that there's never a necessity to suffer. There is a necessity to bear witness, and sometimes it seems that the only response to that is suffering, and I can certainly vouch for that. But in the end, I think that you have to look more for, like, why we would have certain things that, you know, we have difficulty with or we can't have or whatever. I think we set that up for ourselves before the life ever begins. I think we and our higher selves, the Holy Spirit, all our angelic friends, everybody that's been on the unseen side of things, they're available to help us now with our next lifetime. And we're sort of sitting around going, well, yeah, this would be a really good goal for learning and for service in this incarnation. Now, what do I need for that? And then you figure out the basically the who you want to work with in that incarnation. You make contracts with other souls to do work, and you make contracts with those who become your parents and who become your siblings and your children. I think that there's a lot of agreements that we come into this lifetime with, and because we have shaped our future life, the life that we're beginning as a baby, in every way that we can, in order to help us do our job, the inner and the outer work. And now, it doesn't mean that we're all going to be able to use every relationship and every situation as we hoped we would. But if you think about things, you can usually find a way to learn from that situation and give love to that situation regardless of how it looks like it comes out in the world.
Ooh, okay. Jim, did you have anything to add to that, or should I go to the next question?
Well, let's go to the next question. I think she did a great job there. It'd be Gilded.
She sure did.
Add something.
Thanks,
no, she sure did. That was great, Carla. You were definitely riffing there, rocking and rolling. Okay.
It is riffing. It came through me. Totally.
Absolutely. Okay, this is from Esther. Esther is from Colorado, and she says, "Dear Carla," well, this isn't really a question, just some comments. "Is your health the result of the work that you do to help others? Oh, sweetie, I pray that your discomfort be less and less and that you heal quickly. I had thought about asking you for advice on something traumatic going on in my life. Then I thought, no, I can't ask you because that is too much stress on you. I thank and bless the spiritual guides that you have helping you. With love and light from Esther."
Oh, Esther, you sweetie, you truly are a baby doll, and I thank you so much for your kind words. Firstly, no, I don't think my health is the result of the work that I am doing to help others. I think that in my case, my health was predetermined before birth. Where did the rock people talk about that? Okay. Was it towards the beginning of the contact? I can't remember.
Yeah, there was a question about, in general, about people who have difficulties that keep them from doing things in the world, and then there was an application to you about how it focused you inwardly since you weren't able to do things outwardly
mm-hmm.
with a physical body that was below standard, shall we say.
Yeah. Yeah, I have a tremendous amount of energy, and if I were given the kind of physical energy that I have for non-physical things, I'd be rooting and tooting. I'd be, you know, doing what I started out to do, which was to have six kids and to work in soup kitchens and to be part of Habitat and just to be a regular help others person. And I'm sure that in terms of polarity, I would have just as much polarity as I do in this path. This, however, was the path that felt the most rich to me. So I sort of gave up on kids, not because I thought it would please anybody, you know, the creator or, you know, some squad that was sitting there looking to grade my life. It was because, in the first place, because I didn't want to be of disservice to Don. In the second place, I didn't want to be of disservice to Jim, both of whom absolutely did not want kids around. So, there you go. I mean, when I was 32 and my biological clock was going ding, 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 I had two times I had my bags packed. I could not get out that front door because I just loved that man so much. And that was the way it was supposed to be, you know. And the raw contact would never have happened if I had gone out that door. So you just have to follow your own advice. Now, Esther, it would not bother me whatsoever if you asked me a question that was traumatic to you. Wouldn't be traumatic to me. I have been counseling, spiritual counseling only. I don't have a degree. I can't say a word about any, you know, whether I'm right for the job or not. But it's just that I've been at this pop stand for like 40 years, and dealt with a lot of people in strange situations. It would be amazing to me if somebody came with situations more strange than the ones I've already heard in this lifetime. So, Esther, be my guest and write that question that you wanted to ask in the first place. I would be delighted to share with you my humble advice, although who knows whether I would be able to do a good job for you or not. I certainly would pray to do the best job I could.
Okay, thank you, Carla. This is a suggested discussion topic from Plenum from the Bring Forth Forum. Experiences are understood for what they are, a multifaceted mirror that reflects the sevenfold nature of creation. Each experience is accepted through the energy centers ascending the chain. Something as simple as eating is normally only regarded as an act of survival in feeding the physical self, and yet it has always struck me that this devalues the experience. From the earliest time, I thought it quite bizarre that people ate in front of the television, not paying attention to their food. I always ate in silence, giving my full attention to the experience. As Patrick once said, this was an act of communion with the substances that were entering my being, and those substances which would be deconstructed and then rebuilt into my very being, hair, nails, blood, cells, etc. There's a limiting belief that experiences are only physical or only mental. But when seen through the above lens of seven characteristics, there's a beauty and wonder in every interaction we have with the outer world, both with nature and people and others. I've also heard Carla mention in her radio show with Monica that every act for her is a sacred one.
Okay. Thank you, Plan, for that suggested topic. I think it's a good one. Well, let's look at food. I'm sure that this topic is about food. In terms of the rays, you look at the red ray and you have to eat to survive. So a lot of people never get beyond that. They have no appreciation for their food, not physical, not mental, not anything. They're just eating and don't think about it much, and that's just their nature. And then you have most people that are eating up through the first two or the first three, because the orange ray has to do with your relationship with yourself and your relationship with one other person. So the typical orange ray experience with food would likely be on a date, and would likely be maybe part of foreplay, as it so often is on dates. And you're enjoying the food and thinking about sex. It's not bad. In yellow ray, food experiences, it's possible to get a little more oomph into the appreciation of food on several different levels, because you might have a relationship with others who absolutely love food and who love to go out and eat at very special times with, you know, very special venues. And you end up putting a lot of worth and a lot of money into vacations that in which food looms large, and you really are enjoying this and that creation of food, you know. And I remember being on my honeymoon and looking at the incredible amount of food that they served on the ship. We had a cruise in Hawaii, and it was a beautiful ship and a beautiful experience. And it really rotated around food. I mean, it was incredible. There was food six times a day. You never were going to go hungry, that's for sure. And it was delicious. It was all so good. And that kind of experience, you know, really moves through enjoying the food on its own, enjoying the food with another person that's close to you, and just a lot of good, rich stuff. But the great thing about food is when it hits the green ray and you just love it, love it, love it. And you don't love it because you just love it. Because it's, you know, it's part of you, it's part of nature, as Patrick said. The substances are going into your body and are going to be reconstructed as your body with the excess that is not needed tastefully removed in the loo, outside of the contact with other people. And when you move through the next ray, blue ray, I don't think that has a lot of, I'm not seeing any blue ray connotations with food. I'm sorry that I'm lacking there. But I imagine that that honesty, that compassion, all of that probably just adds to the experiences that you're having while you're eating, so that you are really appreciating the food, the fact that you know, the animal or the vegetable gave its life for you. You know, when people talk about not eating meat, they are very heavy on, well, you know, that the poor cow, you know. And I say, well, what about, you know, the cry of the asparagus? You know, what about the death knell of the carrot wrenched from the ground? You know, it was doing nothing to harm anybody, just sitting there growing. All of a sudden, and it becomes, you know, your food. I mean, whatever you're eating, you need to thank not only the creator, but the food. You need to thank that entity, the carrot, or the food, or the red meat, that lived and died and gave itself so that you may have more abundant health. And food definitely goes up into sacredness. And that is when you truly make something that is very hard for this culture to do. You make a ritual out of it. You've seen people do this with wine. There are people that do this with everything that they make, everything that they cook. The best cooks in the world are probably like this. But say that you're a cook. When you add love to the food, now that ranks it right up there into sacred food. And, you know, I think one thing people miss when they say, well, you really shouldn't eat meat. Well, the way they treat the animals when they're alive, you really shouldn't eat that meat, regardless of your feelings otherwise, because if you'll just take a look at the data, the chickens and the hogs and the beeves are grown in horribly inhumane circumstances, in a huge crowd and crush, not at all natural. They're eating food that is not at all natural to them. And when you eat that, you're getting the unnatural food that has made them different and made their bodies less valuable in terms of their own life. You know, they were ill. People, I remember reading a statistic on how many chickens have cancer, and most of the chickens that are grown have cancer in their breasts. And this is what we're eating, folks, when we go to McDonald's and get a chicken sandwich. I mean, it's just hard to believe how cruel we are to the animals that we eat. And the eating of them isn't the cruel part. The eating of them is when they're alive. They should not be treated like that. No, no, no. So, okay, going to the coda now, I've said enough about food, and just, I guess, what I really feel is that you're absolutely right. Plenum, I know that it's not normal in this society, but if you would take the time to eat, focusing on the food and the company, I think you're going to find your experience is much enhanced because you have given praise and thanks for your food and praise and thanks for the company.
Okay, and if any of our listeners that are new to the Bring Forth Forum, you can find some more discussion on that topic in the Bring Forum 2 section under Health and Diet. There's a number of threads about this topic, as well as colors in foods and how they relate to the chakras and that sort of thing. So I wanted to toss that out. Okay, our next question. Yeah, there's actually several. Our next question is from, I'm not sure how to pronounce this, Sursen. Hi, Carla. Discovering the Law of One was a turning point for me. It reflected so perfectly my inner feelings and was a trip to read. Boy, isn't that the truth. Rather, it was a trip to read what I assumed were my personal thoughts being put so eloquently into words by some other being. Anyway, I found your blog and joined today, so thanks for the hard work. My question is, I recently read the Cassiopeia channelings and found the discussion of the dark star, our binary twin, very compelling. In this work, it states that the cycle of catastrophe, see catalyst, syncs with the human cycles so as to have each aspect act upon the other in similar but different ways, particularly in cycles of 3,600 years, both spiritually and physically. It also refers to a wave which can amplify the experience, and that apparently the wave will occur this time around. This wave spoke to me as a reference to the harvest nature of this time. The wave could be the harvest. What can you add to this type of concept? What could you add to such a discussion based on your findings? I found this info resonated so strongly with me, which is rare, so much that I was led here apparently and compelled to ask you your thoughts. Thanks for all your efforts, Carla. This is from Sersen, or S-R-S-E-N, so it's your call on how to say that.
Mm-hmm. I have not focused on the Cassiopeia channelings. And I think that I need to call upon my long-time policy, which is never, ever to say anything about other people's channeling. I will say this about channeling in general. If the information really appeals to you and you're really into it, it feels right, then it is for you. If you find that your reactions to it involve a lot of fear, if there's a feeling of doom about what's about to happen, if there is a tightening up of your body or your thoughts into fear and anxiety, that is probably not a positively oriented channel, or they have lost the positive channel because of specific questions or fear-based questions or prophecies about the future. Those elements almost always pull down a channeling. And I just either I don't take questions like that, or I allow the answer to be, I don't know. And that's it. And, you know, doesn't make me look bad as a channel. It makes me look like, gosh, can this woman channel at all? But, you know, sometimes the answer is just like, we're not going to talk about that. That's not something we would talk about. It's, you know, they just don't do prophecies. They don't do specific questions. I can't remember where it was, but the advice at some point was, if the question is not going to matter in 10,000 years, then the question doesn't matter now. So not that we have nothing but those kind of questions in our work, but we try hard to ask people to ask the kind of questions that will bring forth material that will be helpful to the serious seeker. Now, the wave could be the harvest. I don't know. I can't speak to the stuff that's in here. The Raw Group and our contacts in general speak about cycles, and, you know, I never heard of a 3,600-year cycle. But, hey, it's just as it could be, you know, just like the Raw's suggestion of 25 to 26,000 years for one cycle. So one binary cycle and 75,000 years, more or less, for a major cycle. I mean, those are just numbers, too. What do they really mean? Nothing. So I don't worry about them. Those are just details. That's my opinion. There are people that are really trying to find out the true answer to stuff like that, and I just don't think it matters. So I think that my attitude towards stuff like this is that I'm not drawn to be concerned with some of these things. And I remember when we asked, Don asked Ra about the harvest, and they said that they didn't trouble themselves with things that they didn't feel mattered or something like that. Do you remember?
Don asked about the percentage of people who were likely to be harvested now or in the future, and Ra said that it was unimportant to concentrate on the percentages, that we were always changing our future by how we lived our lives now.
Yeah. So, Jim, would you have anything to give to that? Because I really don't feel like I've helped Sirson.
No, I think you get some good advice. You know, everybody needs to look at whatever information they're reading and determine whether or not they feel it's helpful for them. And if they feel it is helpful, then it will be, and they need to pursue it.
Right. You're never wrong. You know, there are no mistakes. As Ra said, there are sometimes surprises. And they say Ra has no sense of humor. Well, okay, I guess we're out. Monica, do you have anything to add?
Well, no. I think we have just enough time for the one more question. We've got about 5 or 6 minutes left. This is from Lightworker. If time doesn't really exist, and going with the theory that the past, present, and future are all occurring simultaneously, has the harvest not already happened? I'm confused. If our higher selves have already been through all this, are they not aware of what has already happened with our harvest? Sorry if this doesn't make sense. I'm getting things scrambled. This is from Lightworker.
Okay, Lightworker. I know, it's just the craziest thing, but here's my best run at this very common question. There are two ways to look at what's happening to us. One way ends with our death, and that's our physical way of looking at things. Physically speaking, you know, we have an intellect, we have a body, we have a personality that makes us like some things better than others. But no matter what our skills, no matter what our achievements, no matter what our IQ, we cannot avoid death. I mean, Woody Allen once said, when somebody asked him how he felt about death, he said, I'm assuming that it's a lie and I will never die. He said, so far it's working.
Yeah.
Well,
I hadn't heard that.
Anyway, yes, it is. But that's one way of looking at things. And in that one way of looking at things, it doesn't make a bit of sense. No, not at all. Not intended to. The physical world is not intended to make sense in regards to the metaphysical world. That's because the physical world is built on nothing but illusion. And what we hope in this lifetime is to find enough of the truth that our degree of distortion or confusion is less. Not that it disappears, but just that it's a little bit less. You know, we're doing well if we improve that number. So when you look at the metaphysical world, the sense of time completely changes, because in it, all times are happening at once, simultaneously. The higher self that you have did indeed go through this exact moment. Your higher self, now mind you, not you, but your higher self, went through its experience of third density as well as the experience of fourth and fifth. And in sixth density, at some point, the person realizes, you know, I really have no more interest in anything. There's nothing more I want. I'm done. I'm completely done. I'm so bored. I'm out of here. I just want to go back to the Creator. And before they do that, one of the gifts that they offer, their self, the self that is metaphysical, not physical, self that is infinite and eternal, it gives a gift back to the self as it's going through third density in any one of a number of illusions, any one of a number of lifetimes, incarnations. It creates a thought form of all that it is, all that it knows, the highest and best of that person in the middle sixth density, and it offers it back to you in the midst of third density. It's not the person, it's a thought form coming to you in third density. It no longer has sixth density life. It is strictly a thought form that waits to be called upon by you. And when you call, it's ready to answer. That's the idea. So, no, you can't think about infinity and eternity when you're talking about this life, because this life is measured. Everything is very measured. You know, it's a, you can, whether you measure distance or the length of time somebody talks or how tall somebody gets or, you know, any one of a thousand details, that's still the same person. That's still the same entity. And so that entity coming back to you is not an entity like you. It is an entity that has achieved the status of a thought form. It's just resting in third density's inner planes waiting for you to call on. And if you have any more questions, you know, I hope that I can help you with them. But I know that there's a lot of confusion and downright, gosh, this doesn't make sense. How do I get this to make sense? When you first, you know, run into a discussion of the way things really are, because it's so far out of the box. Is it really like that? Is there all this? There's so much more than you could have thought would be possible in this little life. And it's a wonderful addition to the life to think about the life of the spirit as it moves through not just this lifetime, but so many more. And the question is, you know, can I help? Can I make a difference? And the answer is always yes. Yes, you certainly can.
So a quick follow-up question. You said the sixth density, your sixth density higher self basically creates this thought form. Well, actually, two questions. Number one, you said that they, your higher self already went through the third, fourth, fifth density. Are you saying they went through the exact same track that we're on? Or
no,
they had a
different?
No, they went
through whatever happened to them at the time that they experienced it. And the other question is, how come there's only that one that made it to sixth density of all the incarnations? And the answer is, well, as each entity becomes a thought form, it adds to the thought form of your soul's larger self. So you get, you know, information that you've learned through many incarnations in your higher soul self, and it all is yours for the asking.
So if it's a thought form, is it still capable of giving, interacting with you and sending love and actually...
Yeah, it's capable of talking to you, but it's just your personal thought form. It's not active like that. It can communicate with you. It is no longer a person. It's a thought form. I would have
so
been, he said, but I noticed that we only have 2 minutes.
Yeah, we are at it. It'll continue.
We gotta
recording.
Go.
Everybody's going to be listening to this on in the recorded archive anyway. But anyway, yeah, we are out of time. So thank you so much, Carla and Jim. And I hope you have a really exciting week this week in a good way.
Yeah.
Okay. You've been listening to LL Research's In the Now with Carla L. Record and Jim McCarty. And you can check us out at llresearch.org and check out the Law of One transcripts and lots of other cool stuff regarding the Law of One and channeled works. And you can also visit the community website, bringforth.org. That's bring, the number 4, th.org. We'll be here next week, Friday, 8 p.m., September 28th. We'll see you then.
trackless wastes of space and time. Down through the eons we have come. The living rivers that our spirits ride. The shining bridge from sun to sun. Beyond the broad expanses of the galaxy, the ancient heavens brightly burn, spanning light years we have crossed the cosmic sea, through countless lifetimes we've returned, we are the wanderers, traveling from star to purposely forgetting what we were and who we are, becoming one of you, as we were destined to bring the light to you. We are the wanderers, down through unnumbered ages, through currents vast and deep, first a whisper, then a roaring. We come to wake you from your sleep. Far beyond the reaches of the brightest stars, the sacred circle was begun. The living words we sang are part of what we are, in everything and everyone. We are the wanderers, traveling from star to purposely forgetting what we were and who we are, becoming one of you, as we were destined to bring the light to you. We are the wanderers, traveling the endless universe, awakening your magic with our music and our verse. We are the wanderers.